and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Tuesday, March 12, 2024. Employees of the South Sudan Human Rights Commission are kicked out of their offices.
Now we don't have an office, we are just operating from outside. Since 1st of September 2023, we actually closed the office as of 31st August.
And some Muslims in Sudan say this year's Ramadan comes with lots of challenges.
We are in the market to buy Ramadan supplies, but we cannot buy all of them due to their high prices and the loss of our sources of income since the war.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The United Nations World Food Programme is today warning that life-saving programs in Chad will grind to a halt in a matter of weeks without urgent funding. The stark warning comes as thousands of Sudanese refugees continue to stream across the border from Darfur and as the rainy season looms, threatening to cut off road access for humanitarian deliveries to the camps in the east of the country, where around a million Sudanese refugees have sought shelter. Still on Sudan, Sudan's armed forces said on Tuesday it has taken control of the state broadcasting building from the Rapid Support Forces, or RSF, its paramilitary rival that seized the site in the first days of the conflict 11 months ago. The broadcast headquarters is in Omdurman, a city across the Nile from Khartoum that forms part of Sudan's wider capital. The army has claimed recent gains in Omdurman after a series of military losses. There was no immediate comments from the RSF. A video posted by the army, the location of which was verified by wire news agency Reuters, showed some of its troops within a kilometer of the radio and TV building, cheering after they had seized vehicles and weapons. Sudanese residents are tightening their belts during the holy month of Ramadan amid nearly a year of armed conflict in the North East African country, where tens of millions of people are living in dire economic conditions. Nabil Biagio reports from Washington.
For Sudanese residents trapped inside the country, this is the first fasting month of Ramadan since a brutal conflict engulfed most of the country. The United Nations estimates that about 8 million people have been internally displaced since the violence broke out between the Sudan Armed Forces and the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces on April 15 last year. About 1.5 million people have fled to neighboring countries and around 25 million face a hunger crisis. Like millions of Sudanese, Ilham Abdou and her family are fasting during the holy month, which began on Sunday evening. Her family were displaced soon after the fighting broke out in Khartoum and have sought refuge in Port Sudan. She spoke to the Associated Press at a local market in Port Sudan.
We are in the market to buy Ramadan supplies, but we cannot buy all of them due to their high prices and the loss of our sources of income since the war.
The World Food Programme says inflation has surged during the conflict and the situation has worsened because of the near collapse of the country's commercial system. The conflict has limited resources, reduced exports, and driven up government spending on the military at a time of shrinking revenues, which has worsened the difficulties people face. Business owners say they are not hopeful the holy month will bring any change in their fortunes, saying people simply do not have money to spend. Here's Muhammad Hassan, a local trader the Associated Press interviewed.
The beginning of Ramadan was an opportunity for us to increase our sales. But this year, we did not make any sales. There is no purchasing power. People buy only a little.
A lack of adequate security is another concern for Sudanese who are observing Ramadan, with authorities pledging that measures will be taken to protect the public. Here's police spokesperson, Lieutenant Fatah Rahman Muhammad.
We set plans to secure public markets, mosques, and gathering yards by boosting checkpoints and security appearance. We shall also limit curfew hours so people can move easily in safe states.
On Monday, United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres renewed a call for a cessation of hostilities during Ramadan, saying the humanitarian crisis in Sudan is reaching, quote, colossal proportions, and noting that over 14,000 people have been killed and half of the population needs life-saving assistance. Local and social media report fierce fighting Tuesday around the national television and radio headquarters in Khartoum, with the army saying it has captured the key building, which has been under the control of the RSF for almost a year. In Washington, I'm Nabil Biagio.
Still on Ramadan, some Muslims in South Sudan's capital, Juba, say the holy month of Ramadan will be challenging because of the skyrocketing prices of commodities in the markets. For VOA News, Viola Elias reports from Juba.
Every year, Muslims fast each day of Ramadan from dawn until dark. This year, Ramadan began on Sunday, March 10, 2024, and will end on Tuesday, April 9. Traditionally, before sunrise, Muslims eat large meal and they break their fast in the evening with iftar feast. Hussein Adam Hussein, a Sudanese trader at Souk Libya in Juba, says this year's Ramadan will be very challenging due to the skyrocketing prices of commodities in the market. He urges Muslim communities in Juba to break their fast with what food they can afford.
I just hope that God will make the citizens happy. But there is a lot of trouble, and the problem is that anything has increased in the market. We thank God the meat price remained stable, and it is the only thing that has not increased. The sheep meat is sold at £10,000 per 1 kilo, and the cow's meat is sold at £8,000 per 1 kilo. I swear to God, it is not easy for us to eat. So for us who are fasting, if they open or break our fasting with water, it's not a problem.
Hamid Ibrahim Muhammad, another Sudanese national, says this is his first Ramadan in Juba. Muhammad says he does not feel the effect of the economic crisis in South Sudan.
Today is a good day. I am fasting outside my country. Yesterday was the first day for us. There is nothing to say. Ramadan is a month of repentance and forgiveness. One should read a lot of the Quran and glorify it. And anything can be done with it.
Hayat Abdul Wahid is a Sudanese refugee who says refugees have little food during Ramadan because they cannot afford items in markets.
The situation is very difficult for the people. Fasting is very hard and people are very tired. There is a lot of suffering among Sudanese, especially the refugees. Any increase in the dollar rate, there is an increase in food commodities. We need help. The government needs to help us with food and drinks. If you are given food tonight, you are not given anything else. Ramadan is a good month. People love it, and there is a lot of good things for all people.
Nuruddin Al-Samani, a Sudanese trader in Juba, says he still hopes to return to his home in Sudan.
Life is getting better every day, but thank God, I hope Sudan will return to normal and people will be happy and there will be no problem.
Thousands of Sudanese fled to South Sudan when fighting erupted in capital Khartoum in April last year. Ibrahim Musa, a Sudanese national now living in Juba, says he hopes this year's Ramadan brings peace and blessing to Muslims around the world.
Tonight is the second day of Ramadan. We in Juba are in the safety of Allah. There is no harm to us. Ramadan is the month of goodness and blessings. It is the month of repentance and forgiveness.
Most Sudanese are Muslim, but just over 6% of South Sudanese population is Muslim. About 60% of the roughly 12 million South Sudanese are Christian, and others follow African traditional religion. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias reporting from Juba.
Still in Juba, South Sudan's Human Rights Commission officials say they are working from their homes after their landlord kicked them out of their office due to lack of payment for rent. The commission's director of finance says she has attempted to follow up on the unpaid rent with the Ministry of Finance. For VOA News, Dennis Longonyi reports from Juba.
Officials with the South Sudan Human Rights Commission in Juba began working from home since last August after their offices were locked by the landlord. Zeila Morjan, director of finance, says the commission has not paid rent in at least 4 months. She says the landlord gave the commission a grace period which expired in August of last year.
The landlord even appreciates paid, even if that money is there, he just wanted us to pay what he owe and then we move. So up to now, we don't have an office. We are just operating from outside. Since 1st of September 2023. He actually closed the office as of 31st August 2023. And since then, we did not have an office.
Charles Fidencia, a human rights commissioner, says since the office was shuttered, she has not been able to work effectively because her colleagues are either working from home or a hotel where there is internet.
We have some of our partners, those who used to work together, like they come to the commission and they found nobody. And even some letters, people come with letters to us, then the guard is not there. And for us, the staff, to meet and discuss some issues is already a problem because now discourages some of us. We used to meet in the ministry's space, but there also is a problem. So the challenge is great because sitting together as a staff, discussing issues and doing some work, even writing our reports becomes a problem.
Zaida blames the Minister of Finance and Economic Planning for not paying the rent on time. She says she has given up reminding ministry officials to honor their commitments.
Following up, meeting, it is now it's supposed to be our big people up there. They are supposed to go and meet the minister. They are supposed to go and meet the undersecretary about this one. But even meeting, I myself, we have sent letter appealing for the minister to pay. Minister comment on that paper for urgent payment sent to the undersecretary. The thing ended up there with the undersecretary. We wrote another one. They are aware, like they are doing this thing deliberately because now even other commission. I don't know whether minister of finance has problem with the commission. Some of the commission also are experiencing the same problem.
Ter Manyang, a rights activist, says the landlord's move to close the human rights office shows a lack of commitment on the part of the government to protect and promote human rights. He says the government should rent another office for the officials who have been locked out.
The current Archigono is not willing to provide funding for its own institution, which is seen as a negative by the South Sudanese community. I appeal to the government of South Sudan to allocate a budget to the South Sudan Human Rights Commission so that it enables it to carry out its mandate fairly without resistance. This will build the trust among the citizens. If they are unwilling to fund their own institution, then it would be better to permanently shut it down.
This program made several phone calls to Malwa Tapdiu, the first undersecretary in the Ministry of Finance, and Barnaba Bagchol, the Minister of Finance and Economic Planning. Neither official answered our calls. Civil servants in South Sudan have not received their salaries since November of last year. The South Sudan Minister of Finance told the local media house in Juba last month that the country is broke. South Sudanese diplomats at the country's missions overseas have not received their salaries for the past 3 years. For VOA News, I'm Dennis Logonyi reporting from Juba.
Listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, West African nations form a joint counterterrorism force. Find out why after the break.
Hello, listener of South Sudan in Focus. We have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. South Sudan Visual Arts Association says they lack support from the Ministry of Youth, Sports and Culture. Suleiman Morgan The information secretary for the Visual Arts Association says South Sudanese are yet to appreciate arts. Juliana Shiapai has more for VOA from Juba.
Suleiman Morgan, Information Secretary for the Visual Arts Association in South Sudan, has been drawing for over 10 years. He says local artists struggle to make sales in a country where artworks has no market. Morgan says some South Sudanese still do not appreciate the power of visual arts. Morgan says some South Sudanese still do not appreciate the power of visual arts.
When we come for the marketing of art, it is very difficult because art is not like a strong material that our people look at it. Like, for example, like when your son or your daughter told you that, like, I want to study art, you will know the reaction automatic. So because the society looking at arts as a useless job, that's why arts, like, don't get its value. That's why when you come to sell an artwork, you will never find, like, many people interacting to buy it. Because for them, like, it's just a picture, but they don't see what behind the picture. So marketing, it has a lot of issues.
Grace Annie Kenneth is an artist who paints on bottles, phone covers, and canvases. She says she hopes to raise enough money to pursue studies in fine arts. She has been selling her work since last year at a cheap price to introduce artworks to South Sudanese.
Another challenge is most people in South Sudan, they don't know more about art. So when they see my products, they wonder, like, this is just a bottle painted. So why are you pricing it so high? Or they don't understand the value of art, quality, is pricing. Pricing is a little bit hard because the materials are very expensive, and I buy them from Nairobi or Kampala. They're not here in South Sudan. So, like, when you're pricing, you have to price on the money you spent on buying, transportation, but the customers, they don't understand that. So those are the major challenges.
The University of Juba, South Sudan's oldest institution of higher learning, offers courses in arts, music, and drama. Victoria Kiden is in her final year at the university. She says she paints abstract work and designs on handkerchiefs, and finding materials in Juba is not easy.
We lack a lot of materials, and mostly when we put our things a bit expensive, people do complain, yet we buy the things expensively. We don't get the materials from here. We normally get the materials from Uganda. Here, they are too expensive. And for someone to have those materials, you want to produce a quality work, you need to get those materials. Without the materials, you cannot have that quality work that you need.
Morgan says foreigners working in South Sudan are the only customers supporting visual arts here. He says the Visual Arts Association has been struggling to compete in other activities in the region, but lacks support from the government. Basketry, net weaving, pottery, metalwork, ivory, and wood carving remains popular in several communities in South Sudan, such as among the Azande in Western Equatorial State, who produce handcrafts from iron, clay, and wood. For VOA News, I'm Juliana Shapai in Juba.
From Juba, we move to West Africa, where three military-led countries, Burkina Faso, Mali, and Niger, say they are forming a joint counterterrorism force. The security situation in the Sahel region has worsened since the militaries overthrew their respective civilian-led governments due to insecurity and threats from Islamic extremists. But some experts are concerned with the latest move as the countries struggle with poor governance and suspension of international support. Mohammed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
After hosting his counterparts from Burkina Faso and Mali in Niamey last week, Nigerian General Moussa Salo Barmo, Chief of Armed Forces, said the three West African nations will be better positioned to create conditions for region security by officially combining counterterrorism efforts. Millions have been displaced by terror threats and attacks throughout all three countries. Oluwole Ejowale is the regional coordinator at the Senegal-based Institute of Security Studies. He calls the tripartite deal to fight terror along shared border, a significant development.
The criminals, the terrorist groups, the jihadists, the bandits that are operating in those three areas, particularly in their tri-border area, they have safe havens across those countries. They are recruiting from those countries and they are perpetrating their attacks in those three countries. So I think it's a welcome development that they want to collaborate in terms of providing military solution to the crisis.
The military leaders in Bamako, Niamey and Ouagadougou say they topple the civilian-led government for failing to deal with insecurity, particularly emanating from terror groups. Since taking power, however, all three nations have seen conflict fatalities from political violence increase by 38% and civilian deaths by over 18%, according to the Armed Conflict Location and Event Data Project. All three military leaders have been at odds with other leaders in the Economic Community of West African States, a regional economic bloc, about how to return democratically elected civilian government to power. Western economic support and security backing has been suspended for all three countries since the military juntas came to power. David Otto, head of security and defense analysis with the Geneva Center for Africa Security and Strategic Studies, says good governance and popular support is needed to defeat the terrorist threat.
The success of any operational or any security or defense pact, you know, often is tied to economic stability. Of course, because it is also tied to people's support. If the people in these countries do not have, you know, daily bread and the governance structure becomes weak, you know, then that could also have a direct impact on the successes of this operation.
Ojewale says a lack of international support may hinder their shared security goals.
They are left with one direction of international support now, and that is what comes from Russia. So, and don't forget that Russia is also prosecuting a serious war in Ukraine. So they might not be able to get sufficient support that they require in that regard. But if they are able to maybe muster some courage and some capability as far as intelligence gathering, and they are able to act proactively in addressing their counterinsurgency operation through intelligence gathering that leaps situations and attack, potential attacks in the port, maybe they might be able to gain some mileage, but it's yet to be seen.
Experts note that given the current insecurity situation in these countries, their militarized approach to counterterrorism is likely to continue to fuel escalatory dynamics and increase violence within the community. Mohamed Yusuf, VOA News, Nairobi.
In its annual Global Threats Assessment report Monday, the U.S. intelligence community told lawmakers that the war in Ukraine is at a turning point whose outcome will depend on American assistance. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson has more from the Senate, where lawmakers called on the House to take up the $95 billion U.S. dollars foreign aid bill.
Running out of ammunition and other key supplies, Ukraine waits for a new round of aid from the United States. Nearly $60 billion approved by the U.S. Senate will not come up for a vote in the House, says Speaker Mike Johnson. Senate lawmakers said Monday that the failure to provide aid would be a serious mistake. Senator Mark Warner, chairman of the U.S. Select Committee on Intelligence.
And my fear is the decision thus far by the House of Representatives not to even take up legislation that would support Ukraine in their fight against Putin aggression has been one of the most short-sighted decisions on a national security issue that I can possibly imagine.
The U.S. intelligence community said in its annual worldwide threats assessment Monday that Russian President Vladimir Putin is counting on Western support for Ukraine to waver. CIA Director William Burns.
We're at a profoundly important crossroads for Ukraine, for European security, and for long-term American interests around the world. I think down one road with supplemental assistance approved by the Congress lies the very real possibility of cementing a strategic success for Ukraine and a strategic loss for Vladimir Putin.
The foreign aid bill also includes billions in funding for Indo-Pacific countries to combat Chinese aggression. National Intelligence Director Avril Haines told lawmakers Monday that aggression is projected to increase in the coming year.
Beijing will continue to use its military forces to intimidate its neighbors and to shape the region's actions in accordance with the PRC's priorities. We expect the PLA will field more advanced platforms, deploy new technologies, and grow more competent in joint operations with a particular focus on Taiwan.
But House Republicans say they will not consider the foreign aid bill until changes are made to U.S. immigration law that make the U.S.-Mexico border more secure. Republican Representative Scott Perry.
We're taking our hard-earned tax dollars and sending them 5,000 miles away without any end in sight. Meanwhile, our border's wide open and our American citizens are being murdered on their streets. That's a problem.
House Democrats and some Republicans are exploring options for forcing a vote on the foreign aid bill, which also includes nearly $14 billion in assistance for Israel and humanitarian assistance for Gaza. Catherine Gibson, VOA News.
Still on U.S. politics, U.S. President Joe Biden opened his State of the Union address last week with a plea to continue to support Ukraine, giving Ukrainians hope that a U.S. aid package will be approved. A foreign aid bill that includes more assistance to Ukraine faces opposition in the Republican-controlled U.S. House of Representatives. For VOA News, Anna Chernikova reports from Kiev.
Stop Putin. U.S. President Joe Biden began his State of the Union address talking about freedom and democracy under attack, addressing the case of Ukraine. He called it not an ordinary moment in history, referring to the Second World War and comparing the war against Hitler with efforts to fend off Vladimir Putin's invasion of Ukraine. President Biden once again called on lawmakers to support a foreign aid bill that includes more assistance for Ukraine after months of delay. Political analyst Mykola Davyduk, a director at Think Tank Politics, said while Biden's speech was received positively in Ukraine, Ukrainians are waiting for action.
I think Ukraine was one of the main topics, and also now we are from MPs that they will act after his words, which was excellent. But now they need to support that words with an action. And that is the expectation of Ukrainian people.
On the streets, people are pleased that Ukraine was brought back to the spotlight, giving hope U.S. support will continue.
Since he is the current president of the U.S., I think he has a certain influence. Thank you very much for the help they provide, have provided, and I hope will continue to provide.
I think that Russia will do its best to delay this aid, unfortunately. But we all hope that the U.S. will still agree on this aid in the near future. Because we need it. We depend on it.
Some were more skeptical.
I don't think much depends on Biden's address, because there are still congressmen there.
While Ukrainians continue to defend freedom and democracy on the battlefield, they are eager for actions rather than words, hoping additional aid from the U.S. will be approved before it is too late. Anna Chernikova, VOA News, Kyiv.
That's all we prepared for you this Tuesday, March 12, 2024. When I leave you with the song Handkerchief by Nana. We've been listening to Nanaya and the song Handkerchief. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer Kwame Ofori and engineer Jumbe Hamza, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Don't pass it, so I'm not to move back. What do you need? It's so I'm not to move. Oba penny, on Fanica wanted, on Fanadi Panchichelli.